Welcome to The Last Supper, your weekly podcast about art in Asia. I'm your host, Oscar Venhuis. Every weekend I sit down and release an episode bringing new perspectives and engaging dialogues with emerging and established artists, galleries, curators and collectors in Asia. Learn more about art in Asia with Christie's Education in-person and virtual art courses, gallery visits and webinars. Visit Christie's Education website and enter all in capital letters LASTSUPPER15 to enjoy a 15% discount. The website link and discount code for Christie's Education can also be found in the description of this podcast. Before we begin this podcast, I'd like to announce the inaugural event of the Supper Club 224, which will feature over 20 international and regional galleries. Supper Club is a week-long event that is a hybrid between an art fair, a third space together, and a hub for engagement with contemporary art. The Supper Club event is initiated by Willem Molesworth and Isabella Chong of the PhD group, Alex Chen of the Shop House, and is co-organized with the Fringe Club in Hong Kong and will be curated by independent curator Anchi Li. The exhibition space will be adapted by Bow Architects, and the Supper Club is open from the 25th of March until the 30th of March 2024. More information can be found on www.supperclubhongkong.com. In this episode of The Last Supper, I talked with gallerist and art technology founder Shavin, and we discussed her journey of becoming a gallerist in Vietnam. We addressed frequently asked questions from new artists, how to price new art, what good art is, and we talked about the future of art with Cohart, which is a new online social marketplace for artists and art collectors that Shavin co-founded in San Francisco. Hello, Shavin. Welcome to The Last Supper, and how are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me, Oscar.
I'm just looking at the background, and I see you are calling from a wooden type of chalet, which doesn't seem to be in Vietnam. So where are you calling in from?
I'm in Vevey, a little town in Switzerland right now, and I just enjoy to be here, the calmness, the peacefulness, you know. So, yeah, and I'm in this little chalet, wooden looking, and I really like it. Very cozy here.
Excellent. So let's delve into your background a little bit more. What is the story behind the art gallery that you founded?
So yes, I began as an artist and graduated as a trained artist quite a long time ago that I cannot remember when. So I began as an artist and I basically working with a lot of artists surrounding me, and I realized that they all are so good at that time. And it's not a competition, but you just feel like, you know, you lost out in somewhere. So at that point in my life, I had did a few exhibitions, and I realized that I also enjoy making exhibitions, you know, curating on the admin side of the artwork. So I decided that I started a gallery in Vietnam. So that was after I stay in Vietnam for 5 to 6 years by then. And what I see, you know, experimental side in terms of like explore and the culture exchange side is not have been very well connected to the internationals at that time culturally. So I have these visions of building the gallery in the way that to have two sets of the different artists, which is one is from the international, and then the other one is a local Vietnamese artist that they could exhibit in the gallery and exchange conceptually, intellectually, and, you know, technical skills of the art that they create. So that is the initial idea that I started a gallery at 2012.
And the gallery you are referring to and began in Vietnam is named Vin Gallery.
Yeah, Vin Gallery. So Vin is, my name is Shavin. So I do not want to put my full name. And actually, many people call me Vin because it's easy, as you also asked me, Oscar, that how to spell your name. And I understand that it's hard to spell. So at the end, to keep it simple, so I had Vin as just a Vin Gallery. So it's just after my name.
I'm not sure if I heard it correctly, but you founded the gallery more than a decade ago.
12 years now, yeah. 12 years, exactly.
And when you began your own gallery, can you tell me more about how you started this? Did you, for example, already had an area within the art that you wanted to focus on? And how did you select the artists? Can you speak more about, let's say, the early days of setting it up in Vietnam?
As I am an artist in the beginning, so I already know a set of artists by myself. And then before I set up a gallery, actually, I have an art studio. So I built an art studio, which is, you know, like studio for artists to come and paint. And then also is the studio that artists could teach art also. So we have a set of artists, including myself. We are teaching painting, drawing, sculptures, figurative drawing or still life. And also did an event, you know, like for the corporate company, like a team building and all sorts of things. That or canvas and wine, you know, like fun activities or summer camp for kids. So at that time, when I set up the Wind Space Art Studio, we already gather a group of artists that is painting in the studio, and some of them use the studio part-time to create their work also. But most of them at that time is more international artists because it's hard for them to have a space, right? If you have the house, rent a house and you paint there, and it's good that you also paint in the studio. So we all work together in the studio, including the kids that is 12 to 15 years old, you know. So it's quite a fun space that I built at that time, a little studio. So from there, the idea come from that I decided at that point, I think that I would like to move into a space which is I could help the artists more. And then I didn't realize, of course, that if I built that, I would be have to give up my artist career. You know, I didn't realize that, but clearly that managing the studio and also managing the gallery, it took up, you know, almost 80% of my time, and later on 100% of my time. So then I, around 3 years after that I have a gallery, then I have to stop being an artist. So at that point, we gather a set of artists and then start from that. And then also that I've been in Vietnam by then to about 6-8 years, and knowing a lot of like local artists as well, and we all just gather food, eat, working on the project together. And interestingly, I think after 4-5 years that I started the gallery, I also started the publishing house. It's called the Impages Publishing House with another two friends of mine, Hong An and Long. So we started the Impages Publishing House with the idea because after the gallery have born, I realized that gallery only carry 15% of the overall of the artists, and the ratio of the gallery and the artist is 1 to 500. So it's big, right? The artist not giving a chance, you know, and often that when they are in their early career, they need much more guideline and much more help than when they are in the gallery, or so-called that they're not even in the gallery and they do not have help at all. So at that point, I do things like that is the urgency to build the community and also to help that artist that just graduated from the school or a very emerging artist. So we built the Impages, carry on with publishing the art book for this set of the artists, also curated 5 of the artists for each of the book per year. And we did the exhibitions for them, like mimicking what we did for the book. And then the exhibitions will be mimicking how it looked like, you know, in the book. And then that's kind of like a lot of creativities in there that for me, as a displacement towards my own creativity. So we do that, and then we import, we take in some of the art book internationally, which is also aligned with the gallery's concept, the idea exchange, conceptual, intellectually exchange with that too. So we build that, and the project stopped after the pandemic because the exhibitions and all that is not able to run at that point. In Pages Publishing House, we also did an art market for the young emerging artists to come and showcase their work and then to sell and to meet their collectors, you know, in there and then start to develop their art and make a living. So those are the core point. And then also the ultimate goal is like all these artists, if they are more matured, to move into the gallery and hopefully they could work with the gallery coming up after all sorts of like experience that they have with us. So that is the goal that we built the publishing house moving, hopefully to help them to move forward to their career as an artist.
We talked about how beginning artists or fresh art graduates in Vietnam and beyond need a lot of support. Can you tell me what kind of practical aid and support you offer them that is not being taught at the art academies?
Often, as a gallery, after so many years in this, I often being asked, it's like, how can I get into the gallery? That is the first questions they ask. Second is like, how can I price my artwork? So those are the, you know, like a very basic questions, but I get it every day, you know. And also the gallery now receive email every week, at least 3 to 5 email, the applications of the artists to join the gallery. And you look at the application, you know, they don't know what they are doing. They don't know the art world. They don't know what the art world and the art markets actually are looking for and looking at. And of course, you know, it's like looking at all the portfolio and then you just like, well, you know. And they do not understand also the gallery need a series of the artwork to be able to put you into one exhibition to start with, right? So I would advise today, if people ask me this question, would be like, if you send a gallery to apply kind of like a job or a collaboration or a partnership, you should send a full series of what your recent artwork with a statement why you do that, clearly to tell the idea. And also, if you could do on top of all these two, it's like the presentation, how you want to present your series of the work. Example, you can mock up, you know, a space and say like, my series will be the best to display in this way. So often what we receive on the portfolio of the artists is like they send you, let's say 10 images of their painting all around. You don't know what they are trying to paint, what concept they are trying to do, all over the place. And when we as a gallery, we see that, we just like, so what we shall do? And then normal, like I will reply the email and ask that, do you have a full series of the artwork and why you do this? And then moving forward is the price, right? Like, you know, like in Asia, I think if you talk to a lot of artists or the gallery, one of the biggest points is the pricing of the artwork. So if you come out from the school, how are you going to price your work? Do you want to sell started from $200, $2,000? What is the best price to sell? What is the starting point, right? That is a lot of questions being asked on that too. So recently, I did also a little kind of like reel, TikTok or Instagram reel about talking about all these small topic, if you may see in my Instagram. So when I talk about the price, what I tell the artists is like, look, the first questions I will ask them is like, do you want to sell your artwork or do you doesn't want to? So that is always the first questions I ask. So I would tell them, if you really want to survive as an artist, start low, you know. So you create 10 artworks this year, example, you sell each of them at 200, and then at the end of the year, you have 2,000. Like, well, yes, it doesn't give you any money, you know, for your living with that, but you started, right? And then at least you sell 10, also doesn't mean like the money size, right? You sell 10 piece of artwork to 10 collectors, So you accumulating 10 collectors who like your work, that's much more important than you selling at 200. And then year after, right, you're increasing 5 to 10%. And then at one point, your supplies and your demand is hitting to the imbalance way, which is your demand is more than your supplies. Then you can raise, you know, 20% if you want. You can raise 30% if you want. And each year you raise, then you also will make your current collectors happy. That, you know, oh my God, I have such a good taste. You know, I pick this artist, I buy at 200 and today is 2000. You know, how exciting for the collectors, isn't it? And to feel that empowerment. And if you don't want, you start at 2000 or 20,000. You keep all the 10 artworks in your house and you're accumulating more and more artworks in your house. What are you going to do with them? You have no one, you know, appreciating your art. You have no one collecting your art. What do you want to do with them? You know what I mean? So that is always an advice for me to give to the emerging artists. And also, there is a lot of artists in Vietnam, they start the price a little bit too high. And recently, when I sit in a table of the collectors back in Vietnam, quite region, and they are telling me, these artists have hit, you know, 30,000. And these artists have sell at 50,000. What else we can do for them? That is often that the questions that they ask me. And what do you think? They often ask me, what do you think? In the international market, how these artists do? Can you sell this artist at 30,000 or 50,000? And the answer for me is no. You know, so I don't know. I'm a little bit worried about the pricing, basically, to jacking that high in a certain way in a very short time.
Two really important points you talked about, and I like to talk more about the portfolio and when aspiring and established artists send their work to you. Would it be fair to say the inexperienced artists find it difficult to articulate what the work is about and develop a compelling narrative for their audience?
Also, because I think artists somewhat that also very emotional in the way that they justify that, hey, I put in this work, you know, it's like 50 hours and I'm not going to sell for $200 because I have put in, you know, like 50 hours. But the whole point is like, it's not about how many hours that you put in, right, that you, in that work itself, is like, also it's like how you explained that work to your collectors and how you tell the story. So I often found that the artists somewhat that they do not know how to tell their story. Anyhow, this should be the curators and galleries' work, but the artists have to give the pinpoint, at least, to tell, like, okay, how I make this and why I make this. And then we will be able to, you know, make the statement for them. But that is the minimums that I think that I will ask from the artists to see when they send in their portfolio.
From the perspective of a beginning artist, I can completely understand that they may calculate their own labor and material cost, especially when it is a very intricate piece of work. And when you take this as a valuation measure, most beginning artists would obviously not make any money because in general business, it would not make sense. So there appears to be a challenge that on the one hand, you need to disassociate your own labor with the opportunity to enter the primary art market. What I understand from you is that you advise artists to kind of compromise at the start of their career, and once they have sold, to slowly develop their prices upwards.
Exactly. You know, so artists is the hard job, really a hard job. That's why, like, I really admire that the artists who are standing today, I really wanted to give them a big hug that, you know, thank you for being there. And also, you know, like walking this journey and enable us to see such a beautiful work that they create today. That's why I'm a failed artist, Oscar. That I am not sustained to work today to standing on their side. So it's the truth. This is the unfair side that the artist would not to kick off like other career that you kick off with any other career. You at least start with like a $10 if you work in the Starbucks or something, right? But unfortunately, artists is not. Even those that you work 50 hours at home, you might not even get that $200 back. So when we talk about pricing early on, when I say $200 basically is some sort of, not the baseline, it's just an example, you know, even though you can start with the $800 or $1,200. So that is not a baseline that what I'm speaking about, but I think artists have to start somewhere. That's what I'm trying to say.
If you don't mind, I'd like to continue to talk about pricing a little bit longer because I am asked about this all the time myself as well. So there clearly is a demand to have more transparency around this. The price that you mentioned of the $200 is, I guess, just a fictional price to illustrate how at the beginning you need to price it lower, but the first pieces could be $3,000, $4,000, $2,000 as well. So if it is not material and labor that impacts the initial valuation of a artwork, what then does, according to your experience, sets the initial or the first price?
I think it's a lot that people do not think about is the material, actually. So more or less like what we consider is about the CV of an artist, you know. So if you just come out from the school and then you have no CV at all, right? So you never did a group show, you never did an exhibitions. So you have to start with somewhere that perhaps that actively to have the group exhibitions with your friend, your peers that you work with, build your CV. It's like build your kind of like, you know, your resume. So build your CV and then build the first exhibitions. And a lot of artists also, they expect, I work with this gallery, now I have an exhibition. And then, boom, the gallery will have to sell tens of my artwork. No, you can't expect that. It's because of like, the gallery also have to start to introduce your work to their collectors. And then the collectors take a first look. And then the collector will think about it. And when you did the second exhibition with the same gallery, the same collectors will come and to look at the artwork and to consider buying, right? So I often suggest the artists will grow together with the gallery 3 to 5 years to see the result. And then work with multiple galleries, not only one. So that is my advice with the artists, that to build your CV that way. So example, you work with the galleries in the Hong Kong, then you work with the gallery in Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam, and then you work with another one in Europe, one in America, blah, blah, blah. But don't choose two galleries in the same city. That make no sense because they will have the contradicting and the conflicts of interest in that cities, right? And also that they might serve the same collectors, that making no point for you to make two series of the artwork in the same city. So if you work with multiple gallery in multiple city, build your resume from that up, you know, and then to kind of like also widen your collector base in that way through all these different gallery, then your price point could set up in the way that it depends on your supplies and the demand.
I have a small favor to ask that will make a big impact. The Last Supper is offered to you at zero cost. And if you like this show about art in Asia, Give this podcast a star rating or subscribe to this podcast channel. Many thanks and let's continue. You've been a gallerist or gallery owner for over a decade in Vietnam. So I would like to know what the current state of affairs is when you look at the development of the arts and the art markets in Vietnam. What can you say about this?
So I will only speak about the contemporary side because Vietnam was split into, you know, it's like a different kind of like the art scenes, right? Which is like you will see the other artists like more like on the tourist street and the different type of painting. So in Vietnam, that is another very good gallery would like to say is a dear friend of my queen. She started a gallery much earlier than me, about 3 years earlier than me, or 4 years earlier than me. So they mark, I think, 17 to 18 years today, and we are 14 years old. So I would say, as a pioneer of this market, what I see is like we have successfully building the contemporary art scene alongside with other people, other amazing people, other amazing curators that come to this country, such as like Joey Butt herself and also others, people who built the factory before, Thuy herself and Gamok Pras and also Win Foundations right now. So all sorts of these people that work alongside and helping towards to build the contemporary world. I think that Vietnam today is having a very solid foundations for moving the artists toward the international. So I'm very excited about this. I saw started from before pandemic, like 2018, 2019. It was a very, very good momentum at that point. And then I think pandemic doesn't hit Vietnam down, I think, in orders like how to say locally, because in the pandemic time when the war is closed and Vietnam develops quite a strong local market at that time along that 2.5 years also. And today if you go to Vietnam, you will suddenly realize that many new gallery is open and few other galleries, you know, like people that they want to open the gallery, they come and see me and they ask for the advice. I always say to them, come and open the gallery, the more the merrier, you know. So because the more the gallery it is, the more artists will get help. So that is how I see all the time. And now many gallery that open and next of the step is like, I will tell them, take a Vietnamese artist and go overseas and help them to bring them to the international market. And this is what I see the Vietnam today. And I think that we are solid now to bring the artists out. And the artists themselves are very solid too. There is so many good artists in Vietnam, I have to say. So I'm excited for next 5 years for Vietnam. And I'm going to open the new gallery in China this coming June, July. Also, that is the point that to take a Vietnamese artist to China as a part of the program, to at least to exhibit. It's like in the gallery over there as the mother gallery, it is back in Vietnam, right? So that can't be avoid to having that exchange, I think. So I'm excited.
That sounds really exciting. Can you already announce where you are planning to open a new gallery in China?
We are looking at the space in Beijing and in Shanghai, of course, you know. So I like both of the city, even though that I lean a little bit more in Shanghai, and we found a multiple space in these two cities. And I can't decide. So I decided now that I will go to China in March for 2 weeks or so to just to see and also to reconnect, you know, the art world in China, because I have not been there for a while since 2019. And I have a couple of really nice collectors there that I, an artist friend also to reconnect. So I think the plan is like that trip, in that 2 weeks, then I'm going to look into the space and talking to a few other peoples and make the decisions alongside with my business partner.
When I think of contemporary art from a Western historical perspective, the 1960s is typically considered as the art of Western contemporary art. So I'm curious to hear from you how you would place it and describe it when you talk about Vietnamese contemporary art.
For me, I described it this way. Let's talk about what is good art, right? Everybody's seeing art differently. Your good art, your liking, and mine is different, right? So I think let's start to talk about good art. So for me, the good art is what you would think about in 100 years. Example, right? In 100 years' time, what do you think, like, which artist today that you see, Oscar, will still remain 100 years after that they are related? Or they could come back and say that, okay, this artist at that point of the time, at that moment of the time that he make or she make that, and today we can be related to that topic, and or we can be looking at that paintings and knowing what happened today, which is 100 years ago, right? So to me, that is good arts, right? No matter that you say it's a street scenes that you paint, no matter it's the street photography that you take today in the wartime, in Simpi, an old lady sitting on the roadside, or whatever it is related, right? It could drag after 100 years, 200 years after that, you feel like, ah, look at these pictures, look at this artwork that I feel like, ah, I understand what had happened like 100 years ago. For me, the value of the art, you know, is the value of what it is will pass through to next and next and next and next generation. So that to me is the good art, right? So when you call contemporary, you call contemporary in the way, then mostly contemporary, it would be, to me, is recording. To me, is the concept. To me, is the idea of the today's world. You know, so anything that is related to what happened today, I call them contemporary. It might not fit in a lot of like European book statements or whatever it is, but that is what I see personally.
If you don't mind, I'm trying to rephrase what you said to make sure I understand how you evaluate what good art is in historical context and how significant an artist and the body of work is. For example, if the media in history books would make a reference to it as a significant piece of art in that it contributes to, let's say, the zeitgeist of that moment, I personally would also add to the historical significance if the work can shift my viewpoint or worldview of how I understand the world, or some people describe it as whether the artist is capable of shifting the current paradigm. I personally call this sort of shift of paradigm also this wow factor, which is this surprise moment you get, this, oh wow, I didn't expect that moment, of how the work and the artist can reframe how we experience the world. And this to me makes good art really great and a significant art piece.
For sure. I do totally also agree to this point that it shifts your perceptions to understand the world differently or the idea that you have differently. So art is fascinating overall, right, Oscar? That, yeah, it just anything that it, not to say change your value or principle, but it make you think. Anything that is, you look at it and make you have a second thought, I think that also could be the good art. I do agree with you. Yes.
Now, we have talked about the historical significance of art, but to be fair, these are very, very rare works that I guess everyone is trying to purchase. But even if they are not significant in terms of society's significance or historical significance, there are many pieces that people are attracted to because it triggers or reminds them of a personal history. For example, a color or an object that recalls a particular childhood memory. this is a highly personal and from a subjective point of view, we could also call this art, but it is only relevant to the specific individual.
You know, I would like to say this is a very interesting topic that I spent with an artist quite some years ago. Like, his name is Gan Chin Lee. He's a Malaysian artist. We spent a lot of hours discussing about a lot of topic, including what is death, you know, like what is happiness and so on. So at one point, he was telling me why he wanted to be an artist. The reason why, he says, like, if you be a lawyer today, or you be an entrepreneur today, or you whatever it is, who will remember you, you know, after 100 years? So that's what the idea comes from, that he was saying that, but if I make art today, my art can be seen 100 years ago. That is the only way that I think it will pass on to next and next and next generations, and to enable people to remember you, you know. So unless, like, you are someone to create an airplane, you know, or someone that creating something that is really big and important, right? So he said, as an artist, he think the best job in the world is to being an artist, because that is the most higher chance for him to last as long as possible. So when I hear that, I was like, that is interesting, right? When the artist say that.
The notion of legacy could be, of course, a driving force for some as well. However, I'm not entirely convinced that art is an easier path than other professions. But let's move on and introduce technology, because that is something that you have a keen interest in as well. And I believe we live in one of the most exciting periods, because I wasn't alive when photography was invented or introduced in the 1820s in France. But I do know that at the time, it was sending shockwaves through the art community. Paintings used to be a depiction of what we saw and experienced around us. And suddenly, the introduction of the technology of photography could do this way better. And this, I think, was the driving force behind many of the new art movements, because artists had to really rethink what art was for. Now, fast forward to today, we have new technological tools such as artificial intelligence and machine learning that again raises the question of what art is, but this time it does not impact artists only, but basically every single profession. So, what is your viewpoint on the emergence of technology and the role of the artist?
Yeah, I'm glad that you asked these questions, because that I do things like the technology will only help the artist, but not to kill the artist. So, the AI painting, drawing, whatever it is, right? My question is, like, how they can complete with the hand-painted idea. I know that you can say, like, hey, put Oscar here, and then, you know, like with a hat, or making him to be what and what, and then the AI will directly create it, that image that you want, right? You do not need to paint it. You do not need to do anything, you know, and then you will have that pictures, right? But to me, that is a digital art. So I categorize them as a digital art. It's same like, you know, the NFT. It's same like maybe the illustrations that you do in the Illustrator or the Photoshop. They are a type form of the art. I do not say they are not. They are, but they are categorizing in the digital, the art categories, right? But painting is the painting, you know? And also, you know, like sculpture is the sculptures, right? So I do not think that AI would switch or change the idea and the conceptual side of the art world, but it will improve and empower more and more people to explore to being an artist in a different way. So this is also because of my belief in technologies will change the art world, so this is also the reason why I started Cohort, which is the online platform that in the Silicon Valley that I built together with my co-founders Kendall about 2.5 years ago. We built this is also because of like we believe the art world is the last dinosaur stepping into to the new world we call what the technology. So what we perceive in Cohort is that we would like to help the whole art ecosystem, mainly the artists, to get there. You know, so think about, as I mentioned early, the ratio of the artist and the gallery and the ratios of the artist getting the exposure from the art world, right? So the artists actually can come in and build their own branding and to make sales in the platforms and build the communities in there and having like a social signaling and knowing how to do the pricing, get helped on all sorts of things that we're trying to build 2 years now for the artists in order for them to be able to manage themselves in this platform. And moving forward, the second phase of this company is like we are enable the galleries or the advisors out there, you know. So think about like me, right, as a gallery, what my pain point is like, I constantly have to look for an artist. But each time I go to an art fair, all the artists that I see is already carried by other gallery, which is the peer of friends that I know, right? So I couldn't work with that artist because they already work together and I don't want to be in the middle of that. But that is 15% of the artists, isn't it? And what about the 85% of the artists where we can discover them? No other places, right? Besides, today we have Instagram or Pinterest, you know. So those are the places that I am struggle with, and also the consultants or the advisors today in the art world that they wouldn't be able to build trust, right? To build your own gallery is a lot of money. To build your own entity company is a lot of money. But what about you sell a piece of artwork today? You didn't have enough trust on both sides from the collectors and from the artists. Who is going to give you the money first? Who is going to give you the artwork first in order to make that sales, right? So what Cohort is trying to build today is like, we are going to put the platform out there for all these advisors to come and curate the artists that they are helping and doing the private view, like a PDF, enable them to make an easy PDF, you know, to send to their collectors and create an invoice in there. And we will help them with the shipping and also the insurance. So that is a second phase of the Cohort is building. And then coming up, what we are doing for the collectors is like, if you read today's news, right, in the press, everybody was talking about the collectors, which is like the collectors that buying over a millions of the artworks, only you call them collectors. And while our user interview, a lot of collectors and artists feel shame to say that they are collectors and the artists also. So that is nuts, right? You and me, even you collect a little pieces like at the back of me, that artwork, you are a collector, you know, but people are ashamed to say that they are collectors. And this is one of the things that we want to try to build the confidence and be enable them to showcase and to talk about why they collect, right? And then the second, which is what I see also in the artwork, many of my collectors, they collect over 50 to 100 pieces of artwork. Their house is full. And normally they buy a piece of artwork and just put it in the warehouse and never see them again. Artists are not happy. Collectors are not happy either. And we try to also using this platform and enable them to showcase. Because you want to showcase in the museum is almost impossible, right? For the collectors, as we all know. So Cohort will be enable these collectors to also share their idea, share their concept, why they collect, you know, how they collect. And I know a lot of collectors that they have a so interesting story, but never been told unless you know them as a person. So this is the whole point of the Cohort to be built. And then On top, of course, you know, the provenance of the artwork and also the reselling powers from the collectors and so many things, we can use the technology to change these verticals of the art ecosystem. So that is what the Cohort is trying to fill the gap in the way.
How you co-founded this platform, Cohort, is really fascinating. And of course, I will share the link to Cohort in this podcast description and the website as well. But I'm curious to hear from you how the role of the gallery is changing with the advent or the introduction of digital technologies. If it is easier to communicate and buy directly from the artist and communicate directly with the artist, what is the role of an art gallery and how is this evolving?
You know, gallery's role, it had been created about 100 plus years ago. And why it got created? Because nearly it's the need of the art world. So that's why it's been created. And I don't think the gallery's role can be replaced. It's because of like, being an artist is a full-time job. A good artist, I believe that you need to have a conversations with yourself all the time or most of the time, enable you to create an artwork. And to promote an artwork is also the full-time work to market it, to do all the exhibitions, and you always need help, you know. So I do not think the gallery or the curators or the advisors will be replaced. So Cohort is here, it's just to help the gallery manage better and work better with the both sides of the stakeholders, which is the collectors and the artists. So we give you the seamless portal to manage the artists better, including to create all sorts of like a previews and all sorts of like sales invoice and all sorts of things. And in also the most important thing is that enable you to discover new artists is not in your geographic if you're interested to work with the different artists, right? Because I meet so many curators, they try to make show in China or Southeast Asia. They say like, I want the artist like that. Where to find them? Instagram, often. And there's no other platforms that they are able to be discovered, especially the emerging one that is not in the gallery. So those are the powerful tools that we think that we can help, you know, to facilitate all this service to the galleries and the curators and the advisors out there, but do not taking away their role. And one of the tools that we do have, it's also to enable the split cost. So example, right, today, Oscar, we sell a piece of artwork from an artist from Hong Kong to Switzerland, where I am here. Then we can go to Cohort, right, say that, okay, maybe artist A will get 50% or 60%, and Oscar, you get 20%, and Shervin, you get 20% of the cost. And directly in this platform, you will get the split immediately after the collector pay. So it's a secure systems, right? That everybody not worried about like, huh, I take this artwork and maybe Oscar, you met me only today and you doesn't trust me that if the collector pay me, you will not get your 20%, you know? So all sorts of this, it will be secure in one platform also and able to make sales and easy.
So it is not a fixed commission, but there's a flexible ratio between artist, buyer and seller.
Yeah, you can. No, not fixed. If you can say like you want only 3%, you want to give someone, if let's say a curator just working a little bit, like on the statement, like helping you to write a little bio and you want to give her or him 3%. Yes, you can.
Cohort is a global art platform because it is online, right?
It's a Silicon Valley startup. So we basically conducted, you know, in the startup, there is a co-startup problems, right? So we need to start with somewhere, which is like a very, geographically, we need to start somewhere, right? To make that place better. So we start in New York and in San Francisco and LA. So those are the cities that we are concentrating in to run our event, our press, our other, you know, like all sorts of things that we start many things back in US for now, but because of my backgrounds and from Southeast Asia, so that is quite some the artists and the collectors have joined from Asia side as well. So it's an international platform that we have 3,000 artists right now, and we hit already 2 million of the sales over the past 2 years. So that is the traction that we have right now.
One of the biggest challenges for new artists is to develop trust through sustained exposure and consistent branding. And Cohart is supporting artists with this, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. So we built in our platforms that if you see, and this is only in the web, not in the app yet. So in our websites, right, you will see that we enable artists to build their LinkedIn bio, we call it, which is that you will see that the artists were enabled to build their own brandings in there. Their first like 6 to 10 artworks, that the best one, either for sale or not for sale. And then also, right, you will see like the testimony from other people and the sales graph as well, like how much they are selling to. Because one of the questions that been asked a lot from the collectors is like, this artwork 2,000 or 5,000, is it okay to buy? Is it the price is right? You know, so we want to build that trust also to other people. When you see the artwork, you see the transparency of like how these artists have been built their career. And what is the social signaling there, right? Today, we all talk about the social signalings, which is like what A say and what B say, you know, how these and what is the press of these artists and how many followers. I mean, like, I'm not particularly like this in the sense, but this is so-called the social signalings that other people wanted to know. So we are helping the artists to build their branding according to what have they built, to show their CV in the different way, not like only a few lines of like, I make this exhibition here, I make this exhibition there, but a real word, right, from a person is more intimate in the way also. So that is what we're trying to help artists to build their branding in order for them to make sales, and they can place the link in their Instagram and to look clearly how their profiles is looking like, is almost like their CV and resume.
Let's wrap up this episode with the last question of this podcast. And if you were to have your final supper, who would you invite and what would you talk about at your last meal?
I will invite my friends, Andre. And I want to talk about that with him and happiness with the last sip of the wine that we drink at that night. Because I'm fascinated to know that, you know, like you talk about that, you talk about happiness all the time in your life, but you know that is your last meal and how you will feel. And I want to know.
Do you believe in afterlife?
Reincarnation? Yes, I do. I start to believe. No long before. And I still, of course, like have doubt living in this very scientific decades, right? And my answer is like, I do, but I don't know.
Thank you very much, Shirin, for talking with me today. And I wish you all the best with the new gallery opening in China. And of course, all the best and good luck with your new art platform, Cohart.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Many thanks for listening to today's episode with gallerist and art entrepreneur, Shirin Zhen. If you like the show about art in Asia, you can support us by giving this podcast a star rating and subscribing to it. More information about each episode can be found in this podcast description and on the website www.thelastsupper.asia. And before you go, you can follow The Last Supper on Instagram at thelastsupper.asia. And also, if you have any questions, suggestions and new subjects about art in Asia, feel free to contact me on Instagram or on my website www.thelastsupper.asia.